Hello, I'm Dave Held. This is number 0424, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0424. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Nick Santora is back on the program. He is the creator and executive producer of the hit series Scorpion, now starting its fourth season on CBS.
The writers are so smart on this show, and they're so talented, and we'll sit in the writer's room, and we'll just start randomly talking about a possible idea we might put in an episode, and before you know it, three people are shouting out the same exact thing that the Sylvester character should do, or Cable will definitely go down this path if we do this idea. We all know how these characters think, and we all have the same instincts now, because I mean, we spend 12 hours a day together, at least. Almost every day, you see these people more than you see your own family.
Brad Schreiber, author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Funny Screenplays, Stories, and More. Can you teach people to be funny?
You can threaten people into being funny. You just have to work at it very hard. Most people say, you know, you either have it or you don't, and I disagree with that. I think you can teach people principles.
Robert Cesario, the singing sheriff, who recently found out that he had siblings he didn't know.
I was adopted by my grandparents on my dad's side, and I never met my mother. And it winds up that I put the story in Facebook. It winds up that a sister got a hold of me and said, that's my mother. This is 63 years later. So I wind up having a sister and a brothers and a whole new family.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0424 was Dave Held, who is in accounting at CN. You see, they make sure the trains run on time, but he makes sure they run on budget. There you go. Thank you very much, Dave, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Andrew Harris was in a hotel hot tub in Mission Valley, California, when he got into a friendly conversation with the others relaxing there. Now, he asked the woman and two men why they were there, and one man answered that their crack lab had blown up. Now, Harris, not catching the joking tone, you see, meth labs blow up, not crack labs. But I digress. Anyway, Harris allegedly answered that he was also in the drug business. The other three off-duty Marin County Sheriff's deputies in town for a two-week narcotics training course put their training into practice. We let him lead the conversation, said one of the detectives, to take it where he wanted to go. Harris allegedly left and came back with an 8-ball of cocaine. A detective said that she didn't have any place to put it because she was in a bikini, but promised to complete the deal the next day. When deputies met Harris to complete the purchase, he was arrested on drug trafficking charges. A search found 180 grams of cocaine as well as ecstasy, LSD, and psychedelic mushrooms in Harris's apartment. This is probably a career case for me, a detective said. I don't think it will ever happen again. I work undercover on a regular basis and have never encountered anything like this. Yes, drug busts in hot tubs while wearing bikinis. You know, that only happened back in the 70s on Charlie's Angels or with Pepper Anderson on Police Woman. Yes. Meanwhile, 44-year-old Christy Lynn Goss, a former administrative assistant to the Garland County, Arkansas judge, went all out when she racked up about $200,000 worth of debt on the county credit card and that was between 2011 and May of 2016. Now, among the many items Goss purchased on the county's account were tickets to Arkansas Razorbacks football games, sequined throw pillows, and a tuxedo for her dog. Goss pleaded guilty on September 11th to 6 felony fraud counts. Her sentencing is scheduled for November 22nd. Garland County Judge Rick Davis issued a statement at Goss's arrest, noting that he inherited her from a former judge. So, basically, Judge, you're throwing both your convicted assistant and your predecessor under the bus. Nice character on all accounts. By the way, a tuxedo for a dog? Really? And by the way, I also think Christy is going to have some dates in her life that she's never going to forget. She pled guilty on September 11th. We all know what September 11th is. And she will be sentenced on November 22nd. You a fan of John Kennedy? Yeah. Okay. 26-year-old Jose Jimenez.
My name, Jose Jimenez.
No, not that Jose Jimenez. And I'm guessing most of the audience is probably too young to know that reference. Anyway, this Jose Jimenez was filling in a job application at a mobile phone shop in Westwood, Massachusetts, when a state trooper came in, went up to him and said, "Let's go." Jimenez replied, "Let's go," and was taken into custody without further incident. Now, before you get all bent out of shape and say, "What? It's illegal for a brown guy to fill in a job application? What is this country coming to?" Just chill. Just chill. Even though the clerk in the store noted Jimenez was as cool as a cucumber, he had just led a high-speed pursuit, fleeing troopers, trying to arrest him for assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. When he got ahead of a trooper, state police say, Jimenez parked his car at a school, ran into the wireless shop, and asked for a job application. When troopers caught up to the empty car, witnesses pointed them in that direction. Well, to use a cell phone vernacular, I'm sure that now Jimenez has more bars. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a man has been fined in the UK for pretending to be a ghost and other rowdy behavior in a cemetery. Anthony Stallard pleaded guilty in Portsmouth Magistrates Court to using threatening or abusive words or behavior likely to cause distress. The court heard that the 24-year-old had been out drinking with friends when they went to Kingston Cemetery in Portsmouth, where they started to play football. A Hampshire police spokesman said that witnesses complained to police about Stallard's rowdy behavior and pretending to be a ghost. The witnesses reported the group engaging in rowdy behavior and one of them throwing their arms in the air and going, "Woo, woo," said the police officer. Stallard of Southsea, Hampshire, was fined £35 and ordered to pay a £20 victim surcharge and £20 in costs. He also had an extra 3 months added to a conditional charge for previous harassment, which he was found to be in breach of, according to a Crown Prosecution Service spokeswoman. A charge of causing criminal damage to gravestones was dismissed. Okay, first of all, who knew that pretending to be a ghost was even a crime? But since it is, I'm thinking that the fine may have been way too lenient here. I would have preferred that he be locked into a room and forced to watch old episodes of Scooby-Doo on a loop.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
Yes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Writer and television producer Nick Santora is back on the show. He's the executive producer of the hit CBS series Scorpion, which just kicked off its fourth television season. The series, which can also be seen on City TV here in Canada, is based on real-life genius computer wizard Walter O'Brien and his group of super geniuses who seemingly save the world from destruction each week, but still have difficulties with normal social cues. Nick joins us on the line right now from the Scorpion Writers' Room in California to talk about the show. Hi, Nick.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Full disclosure, I'm a big fan of the show, for those out there who don't already know that. So I'm glad that it's on for the fourth season as you get closer and closer to that holy grail of 100 episodes.
I hope we get there. That is the goal. The goal is 100 and then hopefully 200.
Excellent, excellent. The reason why I wanted to talk to you is because, I mean, we've talked about some of your shows in the past. You've worked on shows like Prison Break, Breakout Kings. You've worked on Law and Order in the past as well. But if I'm not mistaken, this is now the longest running show that is your own creation. Is that correct?
That's accurate, though. I'm uncomfortable with own creation because we've got, I don't know, 125 people that work so hard on this show, if not more. So it's truly a team effort. But yes, the show is in its fourth season, so it's running a pretty long time, and we're thrilled about that.
So I'm always curious to know, because I'm sure you go through the pitch process, you pitch it to the networks, it becomes a living, breathing thing. Does it become any easier working with the characters and developing the characters when you're in a fourth season as opposed to when you're first starting out?
It does. We have such a great writing team, and we all know now, I mean, we're an episode 80-something that we're in the process of making right now, and the writers are so smart on this show, and they're so talented. And we'll sit in the writer's room, and we'll just start randomly talking about a possible idea we might put in an episode. And before you know it, three people are shouting out the same exact thing that the Sylvester character should do. Or Cabe will definitely go down this path if we do this idea. We all know how these characters think, and we all have the same instincts now because, I mean, we spend 12 hours a day together at least. Almost every day, you see these people more than you see your own family, and in a scary way, you start to think the same, which may be healthy or unhealthy. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned family. I'm sure your characters are like family as well. Which maybe this will be an unfair question to ask, but is there ever a period of time, or has it changed over the 4 years, where you're really psyched to write something for a particular character?
Oh, absolutely. We did an episode last year where some of the characters went into a seed vault and inhaled a fungus that causes hallucinations in the fear center of the brain. And it's based on, you know, some real scientific data. And then we always take that and very often we'll fictionalize or exaggerate a little bit. But one of the storylines was the Cabe Gallo character, played brilliantly by Robert Patrick, started to hallucinate that he was living in a sitcom. And he was, because he had made a comment earlier that he didn't want to be a typical sitcom couple with respect to his girlfriend, where the guy just wasn't clearly good looking enough or sexy enough to be with this beautiful woman, which happens a lot on sitcoms. And Robert Patrick went into this terrifying fantasy of being in this situational comedy with his girlfriend, and we put in a sitcom laugh track, and we changed the lighting so it looked like a sitcom, and it was a sitcom set, and it was a bunch of cheesy, old jokes, because he feels he's too old for his girlfriend. We couldn't wait to write that, because we knew it would be fun, we knew the audience would find it fun, we knew Robert Patrick would crush that scene, and it was really exciting. To answer your question, Peter, if you can't still get excited to write for the characters on a show, it's time to go write something else. Because to write, you have to be interested, you have to be excited, you have to be invested in it, or you're going to write bad stuff, and the audience is going to know it's bad, and they're going to stop watching, and then you're going to get fired. So you have to be excited to write this stuff, and we are every day.
Because of the actors you have, the amazing cast that the show has, and the chemistry between them, has this show morphed into something different from when you guys first pitched this idea of a show? Has it taken you in directions that you never thought this show would go when you were first mounting this project?
Yes. In the developing of this show, I always wanted it to be an action comedy. I grew up watching 48 Hours and, Beverly Hills Cop and and Midnight Run. And these are just great films and such fun films. And those are the films of my youth. So I wanted to do an action comedy. What I didn't realize and what it morphed into is I didn't realize that it would turn into something as family-friendly as it has become. CBS is constantly being told and getting data that this show is watched by families, that parents are watching this with their, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, and the whole family gathers around and watches it, which, you know, for a guy who wrote on Prison Break and Law and Order, where people were getting shivved and murdered and shot, and this is new for me. It's not new anymore. It's been 4 years, but it was that it kind of morphed into this family-friendly show, and we all take a lot of pride in that. I'm not saying every once in a while we'll have a, you know, a butt joke or a fart joke or something like that on the show, and it's funny, but for most part, you can watch the show with your kids, and we take pride in that because it's a crazy world out there, and sometimes you just want to sit down, forget your worries, and just be entertained and laugh, and that's what we're trying to provide.
Speaking of the network, there's sometimes situations where shows are pitched to one or several networks. It's originally thought to be picked up by one, and then for whatever reason doesn't get picked up by that network, and it goes to another. And I'm kind of curious to know in this show and in other shows you've worked, how much of a role the network plays in what is essentially the final look and thought process of a show. In other words, how different would Scorpion be if it were on NBC or ABC or Fox?
It could be quite different. It would depend on the executives that are there at the time. Executives in this business shockingly move around a lot. You have the Les Moonveses of the world who are there forever because they're great at what they do and they run the business so well. But a little bit lower down the ladder, when you're getting to some of the creative executives and things of that nature, these people do change. So a network could want one thing 1 year, and 3 years later they're looking for something different based on the preferences and personalities of those executives. CBS, during this process, especially as the show has, you know, really gotten its fan base and has been successful, they have given us a great deal of creative freedom to do episodes like the premiere from a couple of days ago on Monday, where we opened up with a musical number. And it was a fantasy musical number, but it was a musical number. That's a little nuts. And they were absolutely supportive of it. And they were supportive of the episode that I mentioned earlier where people were hallucinating. And they were supportive of the episode where we blasted Walter up into space. And that type of support allows us to do, you know, the show that we want to do. And if I was at another network, I don't know how that would play out. I'm just thrilled that we're on CBS.
There are on the show, amongst the cast, two couples in the characters that are on the show. Was that something that was planned when you first put the show together, or was that something that developed because of the chemistry amongst the actors and the characters that they play?
That was a plan that I'd had from the beginning while writing the pilot, that, you know, Walter O'Brien, played by Elias, brilliantly on the show, is a man who can solve mathematical theorems and scientific problems at the drop of a hat, and it's easy for him. He can't solve relationships. He can't solve, quote-unquote, humans, because he considers himself not really a human because his brain is so different from humans. And he definitely can't solve love and romance. So the thought that I always had is, if you're like the fourth or fifth smartest person in the world, you're kind of one in 1.8 billion, and that's got to be lonely. So that was the theme that I always wanted to play with, and how could he fall in love? And then once he was in love, how could that work? And I knew that's what we wanted to explore through the course of the show. As for the Toby and Happy characters, they're just very fun characters, and I thought it would be fun if we had this real, you know, tough, strong engineer, and she's kind of closed off emotionally, and then this wacky genius behaviorist, and his whole life is studying human behavior and emotions, even though he doesn't always handle that well himself because of his high IQ, and we wanted to pair them together. And we didn't really ever veer away from that. We knew that's where we wanted to go with it. show through its course, and so far the fans have been enjoying it.
Well, it's a blast to watch. Congratulations on the fact that you started your fourth season. I'm hoping you have 14 seasons.
And one, me too.
And quite frankly, one of the reasons I'm curious to see where this show goes down the road is I want to see how Ralph develops as he hits, you know, puberty and beyond, and what happens to his young role, because I find he's such an engaging character as well.
He is, and he's played wonderfully by Riley, and I will give your the fans of your show this little tease. You mentioned Ralph getting older, growing up a little bit. Ralph's falling in love in season four, and we're going to see what Ralph does with his first true crush, and it's going to be fun.
Excellent. Nick, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, I love your program. Thank you for having me on.
Nick Santora, executive producer of Scorpion on CBS. The show airs Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. Check your local listings. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet the author of What Are You Laughing At? Plus, we'll meet the singing sheriff who discovered he has a larger family than he ever thought possible. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get back to the stuff, shall we? Police officers in Surf City, North Carolina, stopped 20-year-old Zachary Kingsbury of Linwood, Washington, on August 30th and asked him to step out of his car because they had spotted contraband inside. Kingsbury complied, but then took off running, heading toward the beach, and didn't stop when he hit the ocean. According to the Port City Daily, Kingsbury continued swimming for almost an hour as police tracked him with a drone-mounted camera, which allowed them to also see the shark trailing him in the water. At that point, said Surf City Police Chief Ron Shanahan, the chase became a rescue operation, and multiple emergency crews were dispatched to pick up the fugitive. Kingsbury was taken into custody in North Topsail Beach and charged with resisting arrest and possession of marijuana and methamphetamine. Never mind the line, you're gonna need a bigger boat. How about, you're gonna need a boat, period? So, do you think the cops just plucked him out of the water? Or do you think they had a little fun with him first by letting him know that he wasn't alone? Yes. Anyway, prosecutors in Switzerland are investigating mysterious incidences involving thousands of euro bills turning up in toilets. The first bundle of 500 euro bills turned up several months ago in a bathroom near a UBS Group AG bank vault at a branch in Geneva. Days later, even more banknotes appeared inside toilets at nearby restaurants, causing damage that required expensive repairs to unclog the pipes. Police have collected tens of thousands of euros, many apparently cut with scissors, from the pipes, and are working to determine where the mystery bills came from. We are not so interested in the motive, but we want to be sure of the origin of the money, said a spokesperson for the Geneva prosecutor's office. He went on to say, neither throwing away the bills nor clogging the toilet are considered crimes, and there is no reason to believe the money was obtained nefariously. So, apparently, either someone has a bone to pick with someone else, someone doesn't care much for Swiss plumbing, or this is just a case of Eurotrashing. Yes. Police say a man with a knife tried to rob a Southern California pizza restaurant just a few hours after burglars had already stolen from it. Covina Police Lieutenant Trevor Gomer says that burglars broke into Pizza Chalet and made off with about $1,500. As the owner was cleaning up after the burglary, less than 3 hours later, the knife-wielding man walked in and demanded money. The owner flagged down an officer providing extra patrol help. Gomer said the suspect, 19-year-old Ernest Ramirez, didn't listen to the officer's order to give himself up and fought with arriving officers briefly until he was subdued. Gomer said Ramirez was treated for minor injuries. Wow. Still cleaning up from a previous robbery when the poor guy faces another robbery attempt less than 3 hours later. What this tells me is this is one pizzeria that I should definitely stay away from. Heck, I don't even want to call them for a delivery. Seriously. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, it was not enough for a Florida woman to have an affair with her daughter's husband, but she had to try to kill him as well. 58-year-old Kathleen Regina Davis of Jupiter was arrested on September 20th after attempting to run over 33-year-old Michael Sciarra with her Mercedes-Benz. Davis was upset with Sciarra for ruining her relationship with her daughter by admitting the two had been involved in an affair. Apparently, Michael had never seen The Graduate. Anyway, upon arrival, police witnessed Davis driving towards Sciarra in front of the house in an attempt to run him over, and police said Davis admitted to wanting to mow Sciarra down and that she wanted him to die. Davis was arrested on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. I think Sciarra is going to have a very long talk with his wife. I also think he has to be concerned about just how close that apple may have fallen from the tree in assessing familial personality traits and/or driving skills. He may also want to sleep with one eye open. I'm just saying. Just saying. Little advice there. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Have you ever wanted to write a script, a funny script? Then perhaps you need to check out Brad Schreiber's new book, which is coming out later this month. He's the author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Funny Screenplay Stories and More. He joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Brad.
How are you, Peter? Nice to talk with you.
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you have done a lot of comedic writing through the years, and you teach it, which is one of the questions I want to ask. Can you really teach funny?
You can threaten people into being funny. You just have to work at it very hard. Most people say, you know, you either have it or you don't, and I disagree with that. I think you can teach people principles. For example, when I was teaching at UCLA, I had a guy who'd been a paramedic, and I asked my students, what's your most embarrassing moment? And I thought that would yield humor, and his most embarrassing moment was pulling somebody who was charred beyond recognition out of a fire. And I said, you know, maybe that's not the funniest thing that ever happened. Let me talk to you a little more about what humor is. And by the end of the class, he turned out to be a terrific humor writer, even though he thought that dead bodies were hilarious to start with. So I think that proves you can teach some people who have no humor whatsoever how to be funny.
Well, that brings up another point. A lot of people just think that they are funny. A lot of people think that they could do stand-up, that they could write funny stuff. When you are teaching, are you teaching them basically what to do that is funny, or are you trying to prevent them from doing something that is not, if you know what I mean?
I'm teaching them how to not look funny. And my mother used to say that to me. She'd say, you're funny, funny looking. Yeah, and that's why I started going to a therapist at a young age. No, the book, What Are You Laughing At?, is a revised and updated version. And for example, Peter, I have something in there that's been reprinted on the web called 13 Bad Things That Screenwriters Commonly Do. And it's a very funny approach to things that people do over and over again that hurt them in terms of comedic impact. So those are the kinds of things. I have another section about varieties of, you know, humorous dialogue. So there, people love lists. If you give someone a list, they'll be so thrilled because they can enumerate and be specific about, okay, I'm going to memorize all this stuff. So the book has a lot of lists, and of course it has great writing from people like Woody Allen and Steve Martin and Irma Bombeck and, you know, just tremendous writers, and I use some of their samples too.
It's funny, you mentioned Irma Bombeck. I used to read a lot of her books, and one of the things I used to remember is, you know, I would say to myself, gee, I think I could write some interesting stuff, and then I'd read Irma's book and I'd say, no mas. You know, I figured, after reading her stuff, I figured, okay, that's truly comedic writing. I'll just stop now.
No mas. I didn't know that Irma Bombeck was Spanish. That's very interesting. My mother, by the way, Peter, Mona Schreiber, was a humor writer. So, you know, I had no choice. I got it genetically. And she passed away, and I started an international humor writing contest in her name, the Mona Schreiber Prize, and every year I give away money to the best 750-word comedy pieces. It's on my website at bradschreiber.com, and I do it every year just to honor her.
Now, I'm looking at it from a stand-up comedy angle, because I know a lot of people in stand-up comedy. There are some old tropes that people don't want to use anymore because they're not considered funny. You don't, in stand-up comedy, you don't do airplane food jokes, or you don't do cops eating donuts jokes because those are considered passé. But is it not true that every once in a while someone can come up with a new twist to an old joke that makes it work and makes it fresh?
Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, in What Are You Laughing At, I have a section on cliché, which I refer to as humor's tumors. you know, you're trying to find new subjects. It's interesting, like, comedians have been talking about sex forever. So now we have Amy Schumer, who is talking about sex in a way that is so frank that everybody says, well, this breaks all the rules. So it's not necessarily a new topic. It's a woman dealing with it in a way that's never been done before.
When you talk about writing funny screenplays, writing funny stories in this day and age, in 2017, does the world change as far as writing is concerned because of the times that we live in? For instance, political correctness, or the current administration, or whatever, you know, the social mores and political mores of the day might be. The fact that nowadays we have things where people have what's known as trigger words. Does that all come into play when talking about how to write a funny screenplay in this 2017?
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? Trigger words. I mean, we need gun control for trigger words, I guess. You know, it seems to me that political correctness is a way of saying, don't insult anybody. You know, pretty soon we're not going to be able to make fun of anybody except non-denominational, politically undeclared beige people. So, you know, yes, I'm not encouraging people to be racist or sexist, but at the same time, humor is about embarrassment and discomfort and shock. So, political correctness doesn't work for me. If there was political correctness in the history of comedy, we never would have had Lenny Bruce or George Carlin or some of the people who changed the nature of comedy and language as we know it. Well, so let's watch out for those trigger words, man. They can kill you.
Not only political correctness, but also the idea that a joke cannot be at someone's expense. I mean, if you go back to the earliest days of vaudeville, the earliest days of silent movies, the joke is always at somebody's expense. The guy slipping on a banana peel, it's at his expense.
Well, you know who has a great quote on this, Peter, is Margaret Atwood, who created the book The Handmaid's Tale, which is so popular on television now.
Right.
And I'm paraphrasing. She said, if a fat man walks out onto the street and slips on a banana peel, it might be funny. But if a thin person who is starving to death slips and falls, maybe it's not so funny. Mm. So again, it may not be about offending groups of people, But what is the situation? Do we have permission to laugh at the situation, or is it so uncomfortable to start with, and it just doesn't work?
Your book, What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Funny Screenplay Stories and More, you're not just approaching it from the point of view that somebody who's going to read this book is suddenly going to write a funny screenplay. I would assume that the audience you had for this book was more broad than that.
Well, yeah, it's actually the first book, Peter, to address both screenwriting and prose writing. It's every form. It's poetry. It's essays. It's memoirs. It's even for students, and I've taught this, who write dramatically, but it's so unbearable. You know, I'm writing this horrifying story about someone I love who's dying, and I need a little bit of humor to lighten it up because people are going to go crazy. So it's often about leavening the nature of the work, making it lighter in an appropriate moment. And then you can go back to depressing us if you want to.
I guess that's also something that has changed over the years. I mean, back in the day, that you could see a fine line between a movie or a television show that was a drama and a television show that was a comedy. And now, we, besides the so-called dramedies that have come out, see comedies with some darker moments. We see dramas generally which have moments of levity in them. Is that something that you feel has changed over the years?
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you a perfect example of that. When Larry David first came out with Curb Your Enthusiasm, I was like, okay, neurotic Jewish guy, gee, never done that before, but he did it so well that I liked it. Now, there was another show called The Larry Sanders Show, you'll recall.
Yes.
And I think it was really well done, but the problem for me is I live in Hollywood and I work in showbiz, and I see those neurotic, vicious people all the time. So it's great to laugh at them unless you're trying to make a living with them. So that show for me was so accurate it wasn't funny, but still... it was a terrific show for people who weren't, shall we say, veterans of the showbiz wars.
Well, I have a similar example, having spent 40 years in broadcasting, and most of it, 30 of them, in solely in radio. To us in radio, WKRP was a documentary.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
See, because you were inside of it. It isn't that it isn't valid for other people. You go... been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and it was the wrong size.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, your book, What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Funny Screenplays, Stories, and More, is coming out later in the month, in October. But people can also pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. I bet you're looking forward to this book being released.
I am. This is a book that I wrote some years ago, and it's been revised for Allworth Publishing. And also, as I mentioned, Phil Proctor, who you had on his, you had him on your show a little while ago. Well, I co-wrote his autobiography, Where's My Fortune Cookie? Fascinating 50 years in showbiz. Not only the Fire Sign Theater, but the Broadway stage and voiceovers and amazing career. So it was a real joy to co-write the autobiography of one of my comedy heroes.
Excellent. Well, a pleasure talking to you, Brad. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Brad Schreiber, author of What Are You Laughing At? How to Write Funny Screenplay Stories and More. It'll be out at the end of the month, and you can go to my website right now at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0424, and you'll find links to Brad's site, plus links to Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can pre-order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's some sobering news from the world of medicine. A practicing cardiologist who also teaches at one of the top medical schools in the country says that the type of medicine you receive is too often being dictated by fear rather than facts. The reason for this is the amount of time American physicians now spend defending themselves from lawsuits rather than tending to patients. Compare physicians in America with physicians in Europe, for example. According to a study by one of the leading survey research companies in the United States, 99% of American physicians in high-risk specialties will face a lawsuit at least once in their careers. In Europe, that number is only 20%. Let's be fair, there's no evidence that doctors in the U.S. are any worse than doctors in Europe. It's our legal system that allows this. So, doctors order more tests to cover themselves in case they're sued, and the cost of healthcare we all pay skyrockets. It doesn't need to be this way. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Robert Cesario, the singing sheriff. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Now, I've got one more Stuff File story that I want to share with you before we get to our next guest here on the program, but I also want to just remind you, just a subtle reminder, to check out my new book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. It's now available, folks, and as the title says, within the pages, you'll find some of my celebrity interviews with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer, Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, a host of TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Dick Van Patten, Gary Coleman, and more, plus two guys who actually left their footprints on the moon. Check it out. It's available on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website, which is BearManorMedia.com. Check it out, BearManorMedia.com. You'll find the links to the book on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So buy the book. I mean, what are you waiting for? I ask you, what are you waiting for? Buy the book. Anyway. That Stuff File story I promised you? Here it is. In Florida, a Volusia County man is facing charges after firing a gun outside his home because he mistakenly thought someone was shooting at him. Police say transformers blew outside Christopher Graham's home, startling him out of bed. Graham went outside and fired one shot. He was arrested on a charge of discharging a firearm in public. Okay, so let me get this straight. You're in a deep sleep, you hear a loud bang, you grab your gun, run outside, see no one committing any kind of crime and no threat to you, and you start shooting. What exactly are you aiming at? What did you hope to hit? Why do some people seem to have a Yosemite Sam mentality with firearms? It just boggles the mind. Anyway. Let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Robert Cesario recently retired from the Cook County Sheriff's Office, where he was a cop for about 40 years. He has his own band, and he is the lead singer and drummer. He's led a most interesting life, which allowed him to cross paths with many famous people, such as Wayne Newton, Dick Clark, the Shirelles, and more. He has also been an actor and done various roles as an extra with the likes of John Candy, Patrick Swayze, Robert De Niro, and Harrison Ford, just to name a few. But there are even more interesting aspects to him, which we will delve into now. Robert joins us on the line right now from Las Vegas. Hi, Robert.
How you doing, Pete? How's everything?
Things just tickety-boo, sir. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. As I mentioned, you were a police officer for 40 years, so it leads me to believe that you're one who is inquisitive and follows through on clues and does all that kind of legwork that police officers are known for. Yet there was a story in your own family that remained a mystery for quite some time. Share that with us.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was it's an amazing story. My dad was a musician and a singer and a drummer, and he was at an Irv Kupcinet Christmas show doing a benefit, and there were some the guys in the band, and it was the end of the night, and they're tearing down the equipment, as musicians always do, and the guys in the band were putting them on, saying there was a girl back there who wants to meet you. And she was in the kitchen doing dishes at the time, and she had been done benefits. She was a singer also. She went by the name of Mickey Saunders. And he went back there and he said, did you want to meet me? And my mother, who happened to be, I didn't know at the time, she said, no, I don't want to meet you. And he was put on by the guys in the band. So anyway, he came out and he asked her, would you mind, you know, being affectionate to me while I come out and putting them the guys on in the band. And she came out and laid a big kiss on him. And the guys in the band were like, man, what did we do? Anyway, that's the story of how I was produced later on. They started dating. And I didn't know about the whole situation as far as my mother, because my mother gave me to my grandparents on my dad's side as an adopting child. So I was adopted by my grandparents on my dad's side, and I never met my mother. And it winds up that I put the story in Facebook, the whole story like I just told you, and it winds up that a sister got a hold of me and said, that's my mother. This is 63 years later. So I wind up having a sister and a brothers and a whole new family.
Have you had the chance to meet them in person?
Yes, yes. We spend every week together now.
And when you first met...
At least once a week.
When you first met them, or at least when you the first couple of times that you were with them, did you find similarities, not just maybe in looks, but in either personality or mannerisms that you could say, yeah, that's definitely a sibling of mine?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, in looks, it's definitely. It's like... We look alike, and mannerisms also, but it's just amazing that I never knew that. And it winds up that my sister lives a mile from where I'm living.
Wow.
So we could have crossed paths and not even know it.
Now, as I mentioned, you're a retired police officer, Cook County Sheriff's Office in Illinois. You were there for 40 years, certainly a high-profile job. When you finally met your siblings, did they realize, wait a minute, I've seen you in the paper before or on television?
Yeah, but that's the thing. They saw me, and it just, we've crossed paths who knows how many times, because she lives so close. We shop at the same shops. I go by her house every day going to work and never knew it. And that alone is amazing that we never met until then.
Now,
that I put this article in there.
Is your mother still with us, or has she passed away?
No, she passed away at 61, and my dad passed away at 69, and he was in fact, Hefner just passed away. My dad produced all of Hugh Hefner's girlfriends, Barbie Benton, Shanna Tweed, Sandra Theodore, all the Playmates. He had a group called the Singing Playmates, and George Burns would also include himself with the girls and do Las Vegas shows. And my dad opened up Caesar's Palace in 1966.
So is that where you also get your musical background from your dad? You mentioned your dad was also a drummer as well, right?
Right, right. And my mother was a singer and a dancer.
Oh, so it's in your blood.
Exactly.
So with that kind of background, how did you end up being a cop for 40 years?
Well, you know what? I saw the struggling effect of the industry, you know, how it's... It's either feast or famine. That's how music business is. And I decided, hey, I'm not going to live like that. I want a pension, you know, and I decided to go into law enforcement because I've always been a law enforcement guy, you know, straight laced. And I did that all my life. And I've handled like John Gacy, and I was transportation officer. And so I transport a lot of different prisoners.
Mm. So now that you've had this story out, the fact that you found your family on Facebook and the word is getting out there, Are you hearing from groups or organizations, you know, adopted groups and whatnot, who are interested in your story because it may be close to home to theirs?
No, I haven't. No one seems interested in it. As far as I think, there's so much going on in this world nowadays that my little story is probably insignificant compared to what's going on with our society now.
Yet people have written about your story. I mean, that's one of the ways I found out about it.
So right.
There is a bit of notoriety to the interesting story about how you met your family. By the way, was there any apprehension on your part? Was it when you found out that you had siblings, did you want to meet them right away, or was there any hesitation on your part to wanting to meet them?
No, not at all. I wanted to meet them right away. Of course, I was nervous. You know, I was first time meeting my sister, which is the first one I met, who lived a mile away from me. I was, apprehensive, nervous.
What do you think the source of your nerves were? What were you worried about, that either you wouldn't like them or they wouldn't like you? What was going through your mind at the time?
It was either, what are they like? What kind of personalities are they? And are they friendly spirits? and it wound up where I'm totally overjoyed. My sister Annie is a wonderful, wonderful girl that I love dearly. It was an automatic love. That's the thing. It's like, you know that when you first see each other, that this is your sister and that you love her very much. And we say, I love you all the time. And we've only been together for a couple of months.
Wow. Now, I mentioned...
I can't help but say I love you.
You live in the Chicago area. I mentioned that you're in Vegas right now. I also mentioned you have your own band. You're the lead singer and drummer. Are you performing in Vegas?
No, I'm not. But tonight I'm going to go see a buddy of mine who is performing. He's Rick Vitale, a very dear friend of my dad's. And his father used to play with my father. And I'll probably get up and jam or do something, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Now that you're retired from the police force, are you gigging more than you were before?
I'm trying. I'm really trying. But the music business nowadays is unbelievably slow. It seems like all the bar places and all the, everybody wants seats, asses in the seats, as they say, that you've got to bring a huge following, and that'll get you gigs really easy. If you don't have a huge following, you're not gonna get as many gigs as you can. And it's all about the bar scene is all about people,
right?
And then they want more money, and the bartender and the owners demanding more money. The agents, they want guarantees. Well, how can you guarantee if people are going to come out or not?
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on finding your long lost family. Are you a man who was married with kids himself?
Yes, I have one son. He's wonderful. He likes to fight MMA.
So you have a son who suddenly has new aunts and uncles all of a sudden, right?
Exactly. Right. I'm trying to get him used to that idea, but he's a good guy and he'll accept it.
Well, congratulations on finding your new family. It's a fascinating story. I thank you for taking the time to talk with us and share a bit of it.
Oh, thank you very much for calling, Pete. It was very, very nice of you to do that.
Robert Cesario, a.k.a. the Singing Sheriff, and the fascinating story of him finding his long-lost family. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this show, which is show number 0424, and you'll find links to Robert's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A woman arrested for using fake police lights to speed through traffic because she was running late for court has been jailed over her $50,000 drug trafficking business. The district court has sentenced Ebony Lyra Holland Harris to more than 3 years in jail, deeming her trafficking operation too serious for a suspended prison term. In sentencing, Judge Simon Stretton said, Holland Harris's downfall came about because she needed a lift to court and chose her mode of transportation poorly. You were detected in a car which was driving down Main North Road, displaying flashing red and blue emergency lights, he said. You were in the front passenger seat and had told the driver you were running late for a court appearance at the Adelaide Magistrates Court. Police pulled the car over and noticed a samurai sword protruding from the trunk through the center fold-down seat in the rear of the vehicle. This prompted a full search of the car. And you were trafficking in a significant quantity of very harmful illicit drugs. Benjamin Michael Stacy was behind the wheel, by the way, when the blue Kia with flashing emergency lights was pulled over. He was also charged. The 31-year-old Holland Harris pleaded guilty to 5 counts of trafficking in a controlled drug and faced a maximum $50,000 fine, 10-year prison term, or both. Police seized the sword, a loaded air rifle, and stolen tools from the vehicle, while Holland Harris had both drugs and $4,760 in cash on her person. Now, why? Oh, why? When you are already late for your court appearance, would you feel it appropriate to be in a fake first responder's vehicle with flashing lights while carrying a samurai sword, an air rifle, stolen tools, drugs, and ill-gotten large amounts of cash? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0424. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0424. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of...
Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.